My friends, we went through a Hanukkah service, Shabbat Hanukkah service, and I have a few notes about that, and then we'll go through other things. Number one is the you notice that in the service itself, on Shabbat morning service, there is not much about Hanukkah, but what is very precious, and you should not miss it. And that is singing some texts according to the melody of Maoz Tzur. And the idea of starting, say, with Adon Olam to Maoz Tzur, that goes all right. It works for the melody. Then we come to Micha Mocha. Micha Mocha by Rim Adonai, which will be sung to Maoz Tzur. By the way, the reason for that is double. First of all, a seasonal reason. A seasonal reason, that means that usually we sing the melody for Micha Mocha with the melody that is very is a symbol of this season. So, for instance, on Pesach, we sing Micha Mocha to Adir Hu, to the melody of Adir Hu. And on Sukkot, we sing it to the melody of Sukkot, and Shavuot, we sing it to the melody of Shavuot. So the same thing goes for Hanukkah. However, there is an additional thing that people stress about the Hanukkah melody being used for Micha Mocha by Elim Adonai. It's based on something which is a little bit a false assumption, and but it still became a very powerful symbol. And that is that Micha Mocha by Elim Adonai has an acronym. Mem, Mi, Kamocha, Kaf, Bet, by Elim, Bet, Adonai, Yud. So, Maccabi. Therefore, it is the symbol of the Maccabees, and people were very, very meticulous to sing Micha Mocha in a Hanukkah melody about that. There is one little problem with this thing, that this is a very Zionist interpretation of Maccabee, but if you look at the book of Maccabees, then the word Maccabee is spelled Mem Kuf Bet Yud, and it's a different thing. Maccabee comes from a hammer, makevet, a hammer that means Judas Maccabeus. So Yehuda HaMakabi was called like that because, like the hammer, he hit the Syrian Greek army, Syrian Hellenistic army. So that's why. But it doesn't matter. It became a little myth of the Maccabi to connect it with Micha Mocha by Elim Adonai, and you can see in Zionist posters or Zionist songbooks or for children, you can see the Maccabees waving a flag on which there is Micha Mocha by Elim Adonai. There is this slogan. It is not historically is not correct, but has become a part of that meat. So therefore, even if you don't do anything else with the Maoz Tzur, you do the Micha Mocha by Elim Adonai in the melody of Maoz Tzur. So this is again one melody. Then we come to the Hallel, and the Hallel you have always the Hodu Adonai Kitov and Ana Adonai Hoshiana. Again, as I mentioned, there was a tradition in German Jewry to use the Handel Judas Maccabeus melody for that. If that's up to you, if you want to use it or you don't want to use it, let me just say something about the Handel Judas Maccabeus. Handel wrote this oratorio with some kind of a commercial mind on the Jews of London. And he wrote it for the general public, of course, but the Jews were very enthusiastic about it, and they flocked to it had a great success in his time. Deuteronomy went to see it. Then he was so pleased with this success that he wanted to write another oratorio on a Jewish theme, and he thought that he would write an oratorio on the continuation of the taken from the book of Maccabees, and he wrote a continuation to a sequel. No Jews showed up. And the reason was that Jews did not read the book of Maccabees at all. It was forbidden to read the book of Maccabees because it's one of the Sfarim Chitzoniim, the books which are foreign or external to the Tanakh. And all those external books were incorporated in the Catholic Bible out of the Greek translation, and so they were adopted also by the Anglican Church. They have what the Catholic and the Anglican Church call an advisory power. That means they are not as sacred as the other books, but these are books that you can learn a moral from them. Therefore, the Christians read the continuation story of the Maccabees. The Jews had the Maccabees only from two sources. One is the Mishnah that you read at the beginning of the service. That the Mishnah is the only place where Chanukah is mentioned in the Mishnah, in the whole tractates of the Mishnah. And the other things that are mentioned are only halachic things. How much candle? How do you light the candles? Beit Hillel says you light from the from the 1 to 8 candles, and Beit Shammai says the reverse. And of course, we know that the halacha is according to Beit Hillel, to the house of Hillel, and this is how you. So these are the only sources. In addition, that passage in the tefillah in the Amidah, where you have Al HaNisim, and the story is told. Bimei Matityahu ben Yochanan, in the times of Matityahu, the son of Yochanan, that's where you derive your information. So people Jews did not read on in Maccabees. They knew only the story of the Maccabees from that from these sources, and they did not go to the oratorio. So Handel was disappointed with the Jews. However, it became a tradition, as I said, to use part of that Judas Maccabeus oratorio, which, by the way, is one of the longest oratorios of Handel, to use parts of it in Hanukkah celebrations. So in Israel, there is a translation of there are two translations actually to that Judas Maccabeus passage. There is Hava Narima Nesva Aruka. Yachar Pona Shira Shira Chanukah Maccabim Manachnu Digleinu Ram Nachon Bayevanim Nilchamnu Velanu Hanitzachon Perach El Perach Zeravim Nilchamnu Lichvod HaMenatzeach Maccabi Gibor. And it became a children's song for Chanukah, not of course incorporated in any services, but became a children's song. And the parts of the oratorio Yehuda Maccabi, Judas Maccabeus, were presented and still are presented in Israel on Chanukah. That melody became a melody also for Hodul Adonai Ki Tov. Hodul Adonai Ki Tov Ki Le'olam Chasdo Yomar Yisrael Ki Le'olam Chasdo Hodul Adonai Ki in many congregations. Yeah, some did it on Odcha Ki Anitani. Odcha Ki Anitani, V'artehi Li Yishua, Even Masu Haboni, Ayetah Al Rosh Bina, etc. So, what?
And the original is, Du Sei Gachori, Jesus Onze Heer.
That's the opposite part.
No, that's not.
That's right.
That's not gemaakt.
Yeah.
It's in English. Yes, but there are associations in this Dutch tradition which is very, very Christian. So the associations you get from it are very wrong. In this If you feel that the associations are too much religious point of Christian point of view, then don't use it.
No.
But
I would advise, strongly advise against using it. This in Holland.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So this melody for Maus too, as I said before, you have it for. The parts of the Hallel. Now, of course, it is strongly advised to sing the Maos Tzur at the end of the service instead of any other hymn, Adon Olam or Yigdal or Enke Eloheinu, to finish the service with Maos Tzur Yeshuati. And as I mentioned, there is another melody for Maos Tzur Yeshuati, which is very beautiful. And it is the Italian melody. Let me say something about the history of that Italian melody. Now, this Italian melody was sung by the Tedeschi Jews. Tedeschi Jews are the German Jews who immigrated to Italy in the 14th and 15th century. They immigrated to northern Italy and had communities of their own, Ashkenazi communities, so they were called, but in the Italian language, Tedesco is German, a German person. He's Tedesco or Tedesca. And the plural is Tedeschi. And the Jews from Germany were called by the Italian Tedeschi. So the melody is a Tedeschi tradition. And it was recorded, that means it was written down, by Benedetto Marcello in 1817. In 1817, Benedetto Marcello, who lived in Venice, went to the ghetto of Venice to write down melodies that he heard, the Jewish melodies. And the reason why that he did it, he planned a big series of choral pieces which were based on the Psalms. And he wanted to go back to the original. That means, if we're singing Psalms, then the original Psalms were created by Jews, and if they were created by Jews, let's use the melodies, the original melodies of the Jews, and incorporate them into that composition, into the composition. So how do you know what are the original melodies of the Jews? You go to the ghetto and of Venice and you write down these melodies. Well, from a scientific point of view, this is not a very founded idea, because what they sang during the 18th century was not necessarily the things that the Levites sang in the temple, or and far removed from it. He had this kind of belief, and so he went and he wrote down these melodies, and he stretched these melodies quite a lot in order to make them a what we call cantus firmus, a basis, a melodic basis for his composition. That the technique was that you take a melody like that and you stretch it out with very long notes, and upon that you write a composition. which is a big envelopment of the melody. So, in his composition, Mao Tzu could be sung Ma O Tzu Yeshu, and without the text. But he noted that it was a Mao Tzu melody. And so in the beginning of the 20th century, some of the people who studied Jewish music, like Birnbaum and others, took the melodies from Marcello's compositions and condensed them in a way that they believed, and it is quite firm, that people sang them. So what we have today is a reconstruction of the melody of Mao Tzu by Idelson and by others before him, but he gave it the final shape of this Venetian Tedesco melody, and it's a very nice melody indeed. Now, for a while, it was thought that the melody is lost in Italian tradition. But a scholar by the name of Leo Levi made very important recordings in the 1930s and in the 1940s. Very important recordings of Italian Jews. And he went to various little synagogues in northern Italy and recorded all sorts of melodies, and lo and behold, there was this melody of Mao Tzu still alive there, with some minor variations. You always know that tradition that goes from ear to from mouth to ear, an oral tradition, has some changes. You have some changes in it. So people were still using it. So that was another impetus to revive that melody. So, how does this melody go? Ma o sur Yeshua ti lecha na el shabeach ti kon beit filati veshar todan zabeach leitachin madbeach mitzar hamenabeach אז אגמור בשיר מזמור חנוכת המזבח. And some sing חנוכת המזבח. And both versions exist. This is a very lovely melody, and I think we should reintroduce it in our synagogues as an alternative to Mao Tzu. And the question is, how do you do that? What I would do, I would take time at a certain point of the service, like say on Shabbat Chanukah, say after the sermon, if there is a sermon after the Torah reading, if there is a sermon, then after the sermon there will be a Dvar Torah and there will be a Dvar Zimra. And the Dvar Zimra, the sermon of song, will introduce this melody. And I think it'll be lovely, and I think it'll catch on today. I don't think that we should discard in any way or shape the old melody of Mao Tzu.
Now, Mao Tzu, do you have an idea where it comes from?
Okay, this is what I want to say right now. Something about the old melody of Mao Tzu. Now, at the beginning of the century, already in the 19th century, people started to notice that the melody is has some German flavor to it, that kind of thing, and there are some motives which are common with German Protestant melodies. And so people resented this melody a lot because it is said that it was taken from a Lutheran chorale, a Lutheran church song. And there is one or two Lutheran songs which have some similarity with it. Thank God, we thank God for Avenari. Chanoch Avenari, a great scholar who lived in Tel Aviv, was a musicologist at the University of Tel Aviv and did lots of research on European Jewish music. He searched into the origins of the German melody. Where does this chorale come from? And where does Maus Zu come from? And he found out that both of them go back to some folk tunes that are that were common in Bohemia and southern Germany. Bohemia and southern Germany in during the 15th century, and there were various melodies that sprang up from these melodies, and the Jews took them, non-Jews took them, everybody according to their own way of singing in their services or in their at home. So therefore, there's no reason why discard the this melody. This gave lots of relief to many people about Hanukkah. Now, the Hanukkah melody must be very old, but it is not necessarily the original melody of Maus Zu. Maus Zu apparently was written in a way that it should be sung. In other words, it was not written to be read or to be prayed, but to be sung. And it's quite obvious from the structure of the song, the rhyming, the rhythm of the song, that it was sung from the very, very beginning. So what is the beginning of this song? There were all sorts of speculations about that, and one of the most interesting theories is the theory about the Barbarossa origin of the melody. And that is the last in the last verse of Maus Zu. I don't know if we have it in the Siddur.
The sixth verse we don't have. We only have five.
Okay. Okay, we have only five verses here, and there was a big controversy about the sixth verse. Now, if you look at the structure of Maus Zu, which is on page 412, you see that the structure is the structure is influenced by the acrostics Mordechai. Okay, you see the in big letters Mordechai. I hope it's clear. Acrostics. Yeah, acrostichon in Greek and also in Hebrew. So you have mem, resh, dalet, kaf, yud. Now, usually when the writers wrote their names, they also put at the end of the song the word chazak, chet zayin kuf, chazak as an acronym, or sometimes they would do the word would start with the word the last verse would start with the word Chazak. Here we don't have that verse that is Chazak because of some controversy about that. Some say that it's not part of the original the original song. Others said that in the 19th century reform movement, they had various reservations about Emmaus 2. One of the reservations was that the last song talks about deliverance from the terrible times that we are in. Now, of course, in 19th century Germany, everybody expected the great redemption that would come with the emancipation, and therefore it was inappropriate to sing that that verse. There was also some reservations. Le'et tachin matbeach mitzar ha-menabeach. That means that I'm waiting for the time that you, God, will decimate or will make a you will cut down, make a slaughter. You will slaughter down all our enemies.
And bark upon us.
Yeah, so there were all sorts of substitute words for that. And the last verse was dropped. Now, the last verse says, Chasof Zeroa Kodshecha. That is the Chazak. Chasof, Chet, Zain, Zeroa, Kodshecha. Vekarev Ketz HaYeshua. And bring the end that will give us the redemption, the redempting end. Bring forth, karev, bring it near to us. Ki archa lanu hasha'a, because the time is getting very, very long. That means the times of the exile are very long. Ve'en keitz li'imei hara'a, and there is no end to the bad days. We're living in bad, very bad days, and there's no end to them. Deche Admon, Betzel Tzalmon. That is a strange saying. Deche means throw away. Admon. What is Admon? Admon comes from. Admon comes is the red-headed one. The red-headed one is not Gilad, nor is it any other one with red head, and of course not King David, who had also red head, but comes from Edom. Edom was a nickname for Christianity. When they wanted to say something about the Islam or in Christianity, they would say Ishmael, the Islam, and Edom, the Christianity, especially the oppressive Christianity. So Dechei Admon, Betzel Tzalmon. Tzalmon is a play on word, comes from Tzelem. Tzelem, a piece of sculpture, an image. But after that, Hakem lanu roim shiva, restore to us the seven good leaders of the people. And that's a reference to some biblical passage. I don't want to go into that. But what is important is Deche Admon Betzel Tzalmon. Let's talk about Admon again. Admon is a nickname for Edom, for Christianity. But in this context, it has another connotation, and that is Admon Friedrich Barbarossa, who was a red-headed a man and who persecuted the Jews. So we're talking about 12th century Admon Betzel Tzalmon. Tzalmon is an image, but in a Jewish German parlance, Talmon is also Talem. Talem is the crucifix. And so reject, they say God, Friedrich Barbarossa, who under the crucifix is doing us lots of, is persecuting us a lot. So because of that, it is seems to be clear that this is a 12th century poem written by a certain Mordechai, whom we don't know who this Mordechai is. There is a famous Mordechai who wrote a commentary on the Torah, but we're not sure that it's the same person. So this was taken out. So the history of it, let me just review it. The text was probably written in the 12th century or late in the 20th century. We're not sure exactly by his personal Mordechai. It has six verses, probably in the original six verses. Five of them are in our Siddur. Each of the verses that we have on in the Siddur talks about one of the redemptions of Israel. The first one begins with a redemption in the future. There is Ma'os Tzur Yeshuati, Ma'os Tzur Yeshuati, Lechana El Shabeach, Tikon Pe Tefilati, may you rebuild my house of prayer, that means the temple, Vesham Todan Nezabeach, and there we shall bring a sacrifice of thanksgiving. Le'et Tachin Matbeach, when you will decimate or will annihilate Mitzar HaMenabeach, the barking dog, which is the enemy. Az Egmor B'Shir Mizmor, then I shall complete with a song Chanukat HaMizbeach, the building of the new altar. The new altar. So you understand that in the Reform movement they had some reservations about this thing, and there are some alternative verses like Becha ani boteach, in you I trust, instead Mitzar HaMenabeach, etc. All sorts of things. And the question is, why did the Netherlands Jewish community decide to restore the song as it?
Well, it's very simple. And everybody knows it. We have in older temporary experimental editions, we changed it, and we put the original only in small letters at the bottom. Some say, some say, yeah. And it proved after years there was really nobody looked at the text when they were singing. They're singing from memory. It was hopeless to change it. So, all right, we have several things in the book where we don't ideologically actually support it. We talked yesterday about Purim and what text do you read, and do you have to intellectually be able to defend everything you say? And the answer is no. If that was the case, we wouldn't have a Siddur. Okay. So there are things that work on a different irrational level. If you talk to me about rebuilding the temple and bringing the sacrifices again, I'll tell you I don't think so. But it's a nice song, and we all know it, so let's sing it. Okay. It's not very rational in that sense, but human being is not entirely rational.
So in German liberal communities, they used to, when they would ask why do you sing this text and things like that, they would say es geht mit der Musik. That means it goes with the music, and that was the greatest reason or excuse, if you want, to do it. Okay, so the second verse talks about the. It goes back to the earlier redemption. That means the redemption from Egypt.
Can I just say that also? This geht mit dem Musik. It is the fight of the rabbis against Kol Nidre. The rabbis don't want Kol Nidre. Yep. Said something you don't do. You don't annul your promises in advance even.
The melody won.
Yeah.
There. You know, and it, in many ways it's a very realistic element in editing liturgy, that music is very important and often also decides on text.
Okay, so the second verse goes back to the first redemption, and that is the redemption out of Egypt. When it says, Ra'ot Sav'a Nafshi, my soul has been saturated with bad things, Be'yagon Kochi Kila, Kala, it should be a Kamasa, Kala. Yeah, in some sidurim is v'yargon kochi kila. Chayai mereru bekoshi, they made my life miserable with hardship. Beshiabud malchut egla, under the subjugation of malchut egla. Egla is a nickname for Egypt because of some prophecy of Jeremiah. The word Egla is Egypt.
It's also where they learned to make the golden calf. Yeah. It also comes back here, the bad influences of Egypt.
Uviado Agdola, with his mighty great hand, arm, Otsi et Asegula, God took out of Egypt the nation, the Am Segula,
treasured people.
Treasured people, thank you. Chel Paro v'chol Zaro, the army of Pharaoh and all its children, or all its actually offspring, Yardu ke'even b'mtzula, went down into the sea like a stone. So that's the second verse. And the third verse, Devir Kocho Eviani, talks about the Babylonian exile.
The translation is on the next page.
I know,
the translation is really an interpretation.
Yes. Well, it's really a question of trying to make clear what it was all about. Yes. Yeah.
So it talks about the reason why the Jews were exiled into Babylonia, and that is because they did not follow the Torah. And it says that ki zarim avadati, because I worshipped foreign gods. And then it says, Kim Acha Avarti, in the Babylonian exile, I almost was destroyed. But then, Ketz Bavel, Babylonia was ended. In other words, the Persians conquered Babylonia. And Zerubbabel, the leader of the Jews, took the Jews back to Jerusalem after 70 years. Leket Shivim, after 70 years. So that's the exile from Babylonia. Then the next verse talks about Purim. Kerot komat berosh bikesh Agagi ben Amdata. Agagi is the man who came from the descendants of Agag, the Amalekites, and the son of Amdata is Haman. So Haman talks about Haman, and he. He wanted to annihilate the Jews, etc. I don't want to go into every word, but Rosh Yemini Niseta Yemini from the tribe of Benjamin, that's Mordechai. You brought up the son of the Benjamin tribe, that is Mordechai, Ve'oyev Shemo Machita, and obliterated the name of Haman, who is an Amalekite, and you were supposed to obliterate the Amalekites according to the book of Deuteronomy. Rov Banav veKinyanav, his many sons, etc. Al Ha'etz Talita, you hung on the tree. So that's the one that you were not very pleased with last night when Annette brought the passages with. And finally, there is Yevanim Nikbetzu Alai, the Greeks surrounded me or came over me, Azai bimei Chashmonaim, then in the time of the Chashmonaim, the Chashmonaims, etc. And then
Ufarzu chomot migdalai, they destroyed the walls around the temple, etc. Vetimu kol hashmanim, and they defiled all the oils. Uminotar kankanim, and what remained from all the little containers, nasa nes lashoshanim, a miracle happened to the to the people of Israel, which is Shoshanim, we call the roses. Bnei Vina, the sons of understanding, Yemei Shmona, Kav'u Shiru Ananim. They fixed 8 days of singing and rejoicing. So that's the last verse has something to do with the with Hanukkah. It was the story of Hanukkah encapsulated in one verse. Therefore, why am I saying all this? Because if you sing only the first verse of Mao's Tzu, you only talk about the future and you don't talk about the miracle of Hanukkah.
That's right.
Therefore, when you sing Mao's Tzu, at least sing the first and the last verse.
That's right.
That you have here. You don't want to sing it all, okay, but sing the first and the last verse. So, this poem comes from medieval times. The melody is a little bit later, say 15th century melody, a common Central European melodic style that was taken by the Jews for Mao's Tzu and by the Lutherans later on in the 16th century for some chorales. So we have this melody. In the 18th century, Benedetto Marcello wrote down the Tedeschi melody, which is much earlier. It may have come from the 15th or early 16th century that he wrote down. That melody was recovered by researchers in the 20th century and now has become a second beautiful melody for Mao's Tzu. No, unfortunately, no. We don't know what the original melody was. No. I just want to also mention one thing about the traditions, and that is the Mao's Tzu is a song that is recognized as the anthem of Hanukkah only by Ashkenazi Jews and not by the Sephardim. The Sephardim do not sing it unless they took it from the Ashkenazim in later generations. That means now, especially through Israel, everybody sings it now in Israel. What the Sephardim used to sing is a tune. Some tunes that they have for Psalm number 30, Mizmor Shir Chanukat HaBayit LeDavid. There are various tunes.
That's a psalm that David wasn't allowed to build the temple, but he prepared everything for Shlomo, including writing the psalm that was used when it was inaugurated. Yes. How else could it be? It kept on saying that David sang it in the inauguration.
There's a story about the melody of Mao's Tzu that is actually just as well Jewish than as a Christian. There's the same story almost about the melody of Hatikva, which is originated from much earlier than what we know as Moldava. Or it's actually a Jewish theme, one might claim. Has to do with it in some Spanish tradition.
But you also have it in the Scandinavian tradition. It's an old, very old Swedish folk song, which is the same.
It's a common kind of. I don't want to go into it because now there are lots of research being done today. Even today, now they're reopening the entire story of Hatikva, and now Professor Edwin Serusi is preparing a big article to summarize all the findings that were. The article, and we're waiting now to see this article and to see what he wants to say about that.
It's also who's sponsoring this research.
How about the Babarovska hymns?
That was done in the already 19th century. The I can't remember if it. It's one of the people from Chochmat Yisrael, from the Studentum. They started researching that, and I can't remember who there was the first one who. I'll try to find out about that. The bubbles, and it was also a subject for controversy about that, but I think it's pretty much well established that it refers to that kind of now It's very interesting. I would like to see that these texts. I would not be surprised, you know.
So I collect because it's so interesting. Okay. Some hymns in periodicals, we have another translation. They're all singable. Can sing them on the melody.
Yeah, but in the United States, they sing it in an English translation
Rock of Ages.
Rock of Ages, yeah. Which tries to be more kind of benign kind of text. Okay, so thank you. So we see that what we had today was, from a point of view of Hanukkah, not very much. You know, what we had is only the Mazel-Tov melody, and what we also had was the Al HaNisim melody that Anna sang, and there are several melodies for Al HaNisim ve'Al HaPurkan, which people sing. Now, I understand that in Dutch congregations, it's usually read in Dutch.
Well, the first part and the end part are sung the way Anna did it. At least if the person who sings knows the melody. Otherwise, we'll read the whole thing. But the there are slight changes in the text we use from the traditional text. It says Nechamot instead of Milchamot. And it adds, again, it updates it until today, like you did wonders for our forefathers, do them also for us in our days. If you compare it to the traditional text, at the beginning and the end, there are slight differences from what you would find in other siddur. They are taken from the Israeli Reform siddur, as Yoram's text.
Which brings us to the lighting of the candles on page 419. 419. We did not discuss evening services for Hanukkah. 410. I'm sorry. 410. I'm sorry. I didn't see it very well. 410. You have the brachot of Hanukkah. You have Hanerot Alalu Anu Madrikim. Why do I bring it up in this context? Yeah. Because it also says Al Hanisim. As you can see in Hanerot Alalu, these candles we light. Because of the Nisim and Niflaot, Ve'ala Teshuot, and it says Ve'ala Nechamot, you see it in small print, Ve'ala Nechamot.
Can I just say, the reason for the small print is there are two versions to this, which are sung in different melodies. And depending on which melody you use, you need the one or the other text. Okay. So they're both there.
Okay, so we need to go into that a little bit and find out what it is all about. Now, my question is, what is the Minhag in Holland of lighting candles in public, that means in the synagogue? When is it done? Is it done on a special day of Hanukkah? Is it done on the eve of Shabbat Hanukkah? or what is the tradition?
Here you do it. You do it on the first evening, generally, with the children, and the kids bring their own harakiot, so you have masses of them. And then it's done in the synagogue also on Friday night.
Friday night.
Just the Amsterdam situation.
Well, yes, the Amsterdam situation, it's a Hague situation where you have services like that. Other synagogues will either have the Hanukkah service on the Shabbat, Friday night, or the morning, or they will do it on the first evening and then not on the Shabbat or something. You know, that depends on, yeah. So there are combinations.
The question is, from that point of view then, when during the service do you light the candles of Hanukkah?
On Friday night, you do it right at the beginning before
at
Shabbat.
At the very beginning, before Shabbat.
On Friday, yes.
Yeah.
Before the Shabbat.
Before candles. Shabbat. So you light the candles before the Shabbat.
And we do it, I think, also when you have the children there, you. Do you start with the candles, or do you do first a bit of the service and then pour later? You start with the candles, yes. First the service, and then you do it before Aleinu again, I suppose. Where?
Why am I bringing it up? Yeah. Because halachically, you're supposed to light the Hanukkah candles before the Shabbat candles, because once it's Shabbat,
of course,
you don't light
candles
anymore. So, so halachically, the place of the lighting of the candles is at the very beginning. Beginning of the service on Shabbat.
Yes.
On Hanukkah itself, if it's the first day of Hanukkah and it falls on a weekday, then you can light it in any other place. And the choice places of that is either, if you need it for the sake of the children, you may want to start with that. But also before Aleinu Lishabach could also be a nice place to.
Well, you have in the daily. Evening service. If you look, it will give you the instruction at the end of the Amidah. Yes, or especially you before Lenin. It gives you there also that this is the place to light the Hanukkah.
Yeah, Liz. Okay. Here is all sorts of.
Tradition.
I don't know.
It's
a good question. I'll tell you why it's a good question. Because in Reform movement of the United States, that they do all sorts of things which the Reform movement in other places don't do. Some congregations do light the candles on Shabbat morning, or what they do is that they light the candles on Friday night, but they light them again without any kind of bracha before the services on Shabbat morning.
So that's why
I would not advise using that minhag. In any case, you want to say about the
yes on page 154 and 156. That is the daily Mincha Ma'ariv service, the ending Kaddishit Kabbal of the Amidah, and there you have the instructions of what to do there, and there you see under the line the third paragraph. During Hanukkah, you light the Hanukkiah.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of Shabbat, in the synagogue, this you do this before the Havdalah, and you have it on the next page also.
Before,
yes, of course. You know, Havdalah you do after Shabbat is finished. Otherwise, you can't light the Havdalah candle. You might have a problem. How do you make Havdalah if you can't light the candle?
Yes. Why do we do these supplications before Aleinu and in the Shachrit service before the Kaddishit Kabbal?
Once again, why do we do?
In the Shachrit, in the Kri, you say, yes, you write before Aleinu, supplications.
Supplications. The additions.
Additions,
yes.
You do Shachri service, you do the additions before the Kaddish as well.
No. No. We do only the Hakafot and the Lulav things which belong in the Hallel, with the Hallel, which become extensions of the Amidah.
Okay.
Right? Yeah. But these are outside the Amidah.
But you didn't answer the question why you
put the candles.
You first light the candle and then make Havdalah.
Yeah.
You just said, you know, Shabbat's over.
It doesn't matter. Yeah.
Because halachically, one would think the other way around.
Yeah.
In other words, you make Havdalah, then you light fire.
Yeah.
After you make the fire, then you can use the Hanukkah candle. And that is the way many congregations
form. Yeah. This
you could do either, it doesn't matter.
Yes. This is what I found is the most common one I was looking for.
Okay.
Because I was always surprised.
Okay, but it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
So, once we do the brachot and we light the candle, while lighting the candles we do anerot halal. So let's go through the brachot and see which melodies you use, because there are very variants of the melodies in various countries. It must be that all the melodies must be in major. Because it's a very festive kind of singing, and all melodies are really in major, but there are a number of variants of them. So I would want to ask somebody to volunteer to sing your version of the brachot.
The brachot?
Yeah. No. One at a time, because you're already singing variants. Okay, Miriam. Let's hear it from you. And then we'll hear it from Mira or Daya. What
happened?
Almost. Daniel?
אשר קידשנו במצוותיו וציוונו להדליק נר של חנוכה.
Okay, it's one variant of this. Is it done in many congregations or only in
the old fashioned Amsterdam Jews?
Yeah.
Now the one that is now accepted by many congregations is the one that developed in Israel actually, which goes Baruch Ata Adonai Eloheinu Melech Haolam Asher Kidshanu B'Mitzvotav V'Tzivanu Le'Adlik Ner Shel Chanukah. Baruch Ata Adonai. Baruch Ata Adonai. This is American version. Asher kitshanu b'mitzvotav. Ne'er shel Chanukah. Okay, just let's put it in. So let me do again the Israeli version of it. Goes Baruch Ata Adonai. Eloheinu melech haolam, asher kidshanu b'mitzvotav, v'tzivanu le'adlik ner shel Chanukah.
We will put that on the net, but we will also put the real one.
Yeah. Okay, now the American variation of it is Baruch Adonai Eloheinu Melech Haolam Asher Kitshanu Bemitzvotav Vetzivanu Lehadlik Ner Shel Chanukah. That's another
version. You know Daniel's version?
What? What do you mean?
That's the one we sing.
Okay. Yeah. So let's record it again. Would you sing it? Your version.
Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu melech haolam Asher kireshanu b'mitzvotav v'tzivanu Lehadlik ner shel Chanukah.
Okay, so sing the other one. Baruch.
Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu melech haolam She'asa nisim la'avotenu Bayamim ha'em Bazman hazeh.
And then you go to the
Shechianu.
No, in the same way.
Baruch. Do the Shechianu.
Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu melech haolam שהחיינו וקיימנו והגיענו לזמן הזה. No, it's not the correct name.
הגיענו
לזמן הזה. Do it again, please, so that we have it on recording.
I don't know.
ברוך.
Correct my way. אלוהינו מלך העולם.
Don't worry, it's okay. We have it. So. No.
Okay.
So right.
If we have the two ones.
Okay. Now let me just say that we need to record all these versions. And you can choose either version, that's fine, whatever the tradition of the community is that goes with it. I must say that where is this from?
It's ours, and it's what I grew up with in Sweden. It's a German background, I suppose.
Yeah. This is one of the triumph songs from Judas Maccabeus.
Interesting.
the first triumphal march.
Ah, right. That killed that one for me. Right. Israel just won.
About Langley Kennel, maybe we didn't do it because we assume that it's very well known and common. Can be melodies for Friday evening lighting candles.
Okay, right. That's a separate issue. Yeah, okay. Not right now. It's a separate issue. Okay, we don't have much time, but we want to go to some other songs of Hanukkah. That is Hanerot Halalu Anu Madlikim. One at a time. Okay, Hodea, do you want to sing Anerot Halalu? That's the Israeli song. Bevakasha. Anu Madlikim. The Sephardic verse is She Anu Madlikim, but the Ashkenazi is Anu Madlikim. Okay, so in Israel they say Bayamim Ahem, Bayamim Ahem, Bayamim Ahem, Bazman Hazeh. And some say Bayamim Ahem, Bayamim Ahem. Three times Bayami Mahem and then once Bazman Hazeh. Yeah.
I have a melody which I know it from home, and I don't know where it's from.
Okay.
It's
חמו שעשית לאבותינו בימים ההם בזמן הזה שעשית לאבותינו בימים ההם בזמן הזה בזמן הזה אז ילי כהניך הקדושים.
I don't know this melody, but I can tell you I don't know the melody, but I know the style of it. The style of it is a cantorial style from Eastern Europe,
yeah.
And mainly in Hasidic circles they used to sing Ani Rota Lanu in this manner, which is nice, and we should record it once to people know it.
Yeah.
Okay.
And how do you continue?
Vayamim
ahem bazman haze. Also, it's an Eastern European Eastern European
composition of Hans Blumenthal.
Yeah. Okay, now this is a cantorial rendition. The wonderful thing
now,
about it,
now let's hear the real one.
Just a minute.
So it's
where is it from?
That's the one we've always been singing in Amsterdam for years.
Is it recorded?
Amsterdam Hazanut.
This was Paulo. That's Hans Blumenthal. I'm talking about what Paulo Gori had all the years.
Is it recorded?
Is it?
My question is it recorded?
No.
Yes, it is.
Yes.
I have it.
Yes. Yeah.
But I have a question, because with the Israeli version, when you go to Bazman Hazeh, you cannot continue.
No, you cannot continue.
Children's song.
Yeah.
It's meant to be a children's song, and it remained like that. Yeah. It's very nice. What is good about that melody, which is really easy to learn, and for a congregation, you can pick it up very quickly, and you can... you can sing it.
And is it advisable that you first sing the children version and then you go over it again and then you do the whole version?
You could do that, but you could also continue reading.
Just the reading.
Oh. Yeah. In a Reform context, what you could do is sing that children verse, mm-hmm. and after that go over it in Dutch and read the whole thing in Dutch.
That's what they do in the children service.
Yeah. Here's another one.
הנרות הללו אנו מדליקים על הניסים ועל הנפלאות ועל התשועות ועל הנחמות על השועות ועל הנחמות שעשית לאבותינו בימים ההם בזמן הזה על ידי כהניך
Okay, awesome, nice. Where did you get it from?
Nice belly.
Who's singing?
It's from Amsterdam. Okay.
From Amsterdam, okay. My father, I don't know.
Okay. Yeah, we record.
So all of these versions, I think, should be recorded. Some of them are recorded, so maybe we can put them on the website. And I'm willing to record any other version if you want.
Okay, just have another word about me and Malil.
Yeah. Okay.
415.
Page 415.
415. Yeah. This is a Zionist rape of of a biblical context. Yes. Yeah. The real text says Mi Yemalel Gvorot Adonai. Who can recount the deeds of God? And the Zionists said, no, we're not waiting for God to send the Mashiach anymore, we'll do it ourselves. And so it became Mi Yemalel Gvorot Yisrael. Yeah. And so it's very, very nationalistic. We, the nation, we stand up and we'll save ourselves.
The best thing, the best way to do, the safest way to sing it as a canon, is to start the second voice on Shema. When you say Shema, on the Shema, that's the safest way. Otherwise, people get confused, and I would do it only. You know, we wait for the second part, and when you come, the first part comes to Shema, the Mi Yemalel Gvorot Yisrael.
I managed to do once with the children fourfold.
Yeah. Yeah, but that's lots of work to do that. Okay. Yeah. Again?
Can you tell me about the
candles?
The canon?
Candles. Nerot.
The candles. What is the minag here? According to... Right, yes.
Why?
Well, the idea is that the essence of the bracha is about the last candle, because that's the one which is obligatory for that particular day. So you start with it. You light the candle.
It's one of the moments of testing to see who knows how you're supposed to do it and who doesn't.
But
without knowing why, but
minag.
But to put them from right to left, I think it's just practical to count and not to start on the wrong place.
Yeah, that's true too. But please remember that.
The
organizing things from right to left is the Hebrew way of doing things.
Yeah.
In Israel, the doors of the refrigerator go the other way.
When you go up to the Aron HaKodesh, more than one sefer, and you touch the sefer, do it from right to left, not from left to right.
Yeah, things go from
from right to left.
However, since the last candle is the candle of the day, therefore you light it the other way.
There are people who do it that they light the candle of the day first and then go the other way.